On Sunday, June 16th, Todd Callan, our newly elected president, made an announcement from this pulpit that the Board of Trustees and Tony Ann Reed, our Director of Ministry with Children and Youth, known as MCY, had decided to part ways. This came as a surprise to many of us. In the following days, speculation surfaced as to the reasons for this action. It's hard to talk about this incident publicly because many of the main actors have left the stage and are no longer associated with human. This sermon is an attempt at trying to understand what happened to our community and what can we do to find forgiveness and to start the reconciliation and the reconstruction process that must happen within our walls. The reality is that there was a clear separation at Human. Camps had formed and loyalties were on display. My perception is that we had formed two groups, formed along the lines of parents with young children who attend MCY classes on one end, and a group of adults without a connection to that program on the other end. Some of the comments that I heard or saw were that some parents with children didn't attend Sunday service or other gatherings at Human, such as the silent auction, and they didn't pledge according to their income. These facts may or may not be true. On the other hand, this same group felt ostracized, marginalized. Some spoke of classism and racism in the adult camp. And at the end, they felt that the explanation for the severance lacked transparency. These facts may or may not be true. There are several group behaviors and dynamics that are worth looking at and that may or may not be applied to this situation. The first behavior is called group formation. We all do this. We have a tendency to gather into groups for security, to divide labor, to build leaders, to create uniformity and habit, and to distinguish ourselves from others. Individual identity frequently forms from group formation, especially during the teenage years. Have you noticed how bands of young women wear the same hairstyle, the same cutout jeans, the same baggy athletic shorts? They're trying to fit in into a homogeneous group. Homogeneous groups have a tendency to polarize. They start adopting more extreme and narrow-minded thinking as time passes, and then groupthink settles in. Some of the behaviors that emerge are, for instance, a high moral stance, collective decisions, demonize or stereotype others, self-censor to create a uniform culture, and protect leaders by withholding information. Do any of these sound familiar? Look at the newspapers. They're right there. So in order to simplify our lives, because we create groups, We also rely on categorizing. That means bulking people into certain types or categories. And the easiest way to do it is by exterior aspects. The color of your hair, the color of our eyes, the color of our skin, how we speak, our accent, how we vote, where we go to church. So the members of these groups have a tendency to make assumptions and predictions that are based on very trivial, meaningful aspects, or simply because of incorrect information. Do I look Hispanic to you? But I am. And then, if one person commits a crime, then all those people that look like him or her are guilty of the same. But it doesn't stop there. We take it a step farther, outside, and we use something called meta-perception. We think we know what they think about us, and it's usually bad. How do we counterbalance that? Well, we are unique. They are all the same. And that eventually leads to prejudice and marginalization. And because we're human, the things that we don't know about the others, we fill with assumptions. And we draw conclusions about the other group that are inaccurate. And we resist getting any information from that other group just because they're another group. So let's try applying that to us. See if you can see yourself or anybody you know in any of these questions. Do you cringe at the thought of praising a particular group that is not yours? When someone associates you with a particular group, do you overreact and do you go out of your way to clarify that you're really not part of that group? Do you avoid exposing yourself to ideas or ways of a particular group? Do you listen to them? Or do you try to get feedback from them? Do you avoid admitting that you're threatened by other groups' processes, prominence, or influence? No, not us. When relationships between groups deteriorate, a war begins, and cultural threats trigger inevitable hostile reactions. I headed the Social Justice Committee during the Iraq War, and I felt compelled to assemble a group to attend a march in Atlanta in support of peace. I naively assumed that everyone at UMAN agreed with my position. But the minister suggested that instead of gathering people to come, that I put a poster outside on Sunday mornings to ask people what they thought, pro or con. Everyone avoided me like a hot potato. I hurt a lot of people's feelings. It has been said that we nearly went to war over peace. And this is an example of a cultural threat. So cultural threats look like this. They increase ambiguity. They confuse us, especially if it comes from a member of our own group, like my case. And they trigger negative consequences more than they produce positive outcomes. So let's look at those three. Ambiguity. We hate ambiguity. What do you want, honey? Pasta or chicken? So we prefer an answer. Any answer. Pick it quick. As long as we can avoid the confusion and the ambiguity. We hate black sheep. That explains why members of a group go to great lengths to punish or exclude members that don't toe the party line. Because black sheep blur the lines between us and them. By the way, in research, people who interact with black sheep have increased heart rate and increased blood pressure. No wonder my face flushed on Friday when I finally confronted a patient for missing her noon medications. Finally, we fear negative consequences because they influence our groups in unexpected ways. Intentionally or not, groups tend to marginalize others. When we're all doing and saying the same, we form a common identity. And when we stay in that place, we start deteriorating in relationship to others. We criticize based on superficial opinions. We feel superior. We refuse to see positive aspects in others. And we avoid criticism and feedback. When we find ourselves in the middle of a conflict, we need to address it. We need to make it go away fast. Gotta fix it. If you're going to remember anything about this sermon, I hope you remember this. All people are more likely to need a cognitive closure when they believe that the benefits of premature closure outweigh the costs of remaining open-minded. Let me say that again. It's a handful. All people, not some of us, all of us, are more likely to need a cognitive closure when we believe that the benefits of a premature closure outweigh the costs of remaining open-minded. What that means is that we can be open to many solutions to a conflict, but we can't stay in that place for long. It's too painful. And the longer we take to decide, the more likely we'll choose a mediocre solution over an ideal solution. Now, there are two types of people. People averse to conflict and people who love conflict. Heretics love conflict. And people averse to conflict will avoid it at any cost. Heretics take a long time to process and reach a conclusion. People averse want to get it over with fast, even if it means choosing an easier or a quicker solution than the right solution. This may or may not be the place where we're at right now. So, let's pay attention, because there are a few healthy behaviors that we can practice right now. Number one, be aware of your own biases. Number two, engage in personal interactions with members of different groups inside of human, just like Alex was pointing out. Number three, leaders can model behaviors of inclusivity and not just offer lip service. And here's the really important part. Leaders must cultivate equal access and equal status for all members. And finally, by working on a common goal, we also respect dual identities. I may be a UU, but I'm also Latina, and that's okay. This is no easy work. It takes time and it takes intention. But last Sunday, I witnessed how we were capable of coming together to assemble care packets for relatives of detainees at Stewart Detention Center. In fact, our common goal was shared with members of Temple Beth Tikva and the Roswell Community Masjid, two historically opposed groups. This is not new work for us. It's what keeps us engaged with family promise frequently. It's why we act in the face of injustice of racism. And it's why we come together in the midst of this hurt to roll out a religious education program for our children. And why we must continue the work of the From Me to We and finish it. We may have differences. We can't agree on everything. But growth happens in the uncomfortable places of our lives. May we embrace them with courage and optimism. Amen.